If you want to learn how to get into the multifamily space by buying small assets, listen to this show. Hello, everybody. This is Jake Senzio, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, Eddie. You know, Barbara Jean, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing okay, but I haven't gotten my shake yet. Have you gotten your shake?
Dude, it's supposed to be coming. I'm hoping for a little door knock, and you know, it's coming, man. I don't know. I can't function without the proper nutrients. Gino, who maybe are we pitching something today? Is it like, are we giving a plug or what? What's going on here?
I don't know. Just, you know, is this gonna be the party of losers? You'd mentioned before we got on the show. Is this going to be the party of losers today? Or are we gonna bring some high value, talk about multifamily, and maybe get fed at the same time?
You know, long term fixed rate. Okay, that's what it's about. You get the rate risk off the table. Anyways, enough BSing. Gang, we have a very special guest today. Today's guest is a principal of Enduris Capital and VitaCare Living, two businesses that made him a successful entrepreneur at a very young age. We're excited to hear his story and how he got started and how he's trying to stay active in an ever-changing real estate market. So without further ado, Todd Dexheimer, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it. Well, it's the second time, too. So it's fun to be back, fun to be talking to you guys again. And I always love the banter between the two of you, and love the show. So,
Gino, here comes the shake right now, big dog. Sorry to cut you off.
What's in yours? I got collagen in mind. I got some greens in mind. I got some berries in mind. What do you got in yours?
It's a real shake. I didn't know if this was some sort of weird like Jake and Gino thing.
It's protein, brother.
I thought maybe Gino was gonna start doing some shaking for us.
No, we're not doing greens. This is grass fed cows because G-Daddy got me on the organic thing. But hey, we're enough of the BS here. So if they missed your first time on the show, I think it was back in like 98. In case they missed that, give us a little bit about your background so we get a little overview before we get started.
Sure. I'll give a quick version. If you guys want to dive into anything, certainly do so. But it was a former high school teacher and started dabbling in real estate in 2008, you know, right as the market was crashing. Still crashing, quite frankly, was buying some single family homes and trying to build this rental portfolio. Quickly ran out of money, so started flipping houses to gain money, to then use some of those profits to continue to buy, you know, duplexes, single families, whatever I could really get my hands on and afford to buy. And so built a nice little portfolio, did like 100+ flips, and you know, had a bunch of single families, duplexes, I think I had about 100 units at one time I had 100 units at one time of single family duplexes, so small apartment buildings, and then transitioned out of that into apartments.
Were you fixing those up and managing them yourself? Were you doing all the work?
Yeah, right. Fixing. How many
calls were you getting on the weekend?
You know what? Not terrible.
He's like, because I didn't answer the phone.
you shut your phone off. You don't make calls. It's amazing. I think I did a pretty good job training my residents to like, this is our business hours. Call during that. If it's an emergency, certainly you can call, but this is your emergency. It's blood, fire, blood. Like that was my saying to them. Like, that's it. Don't call me otherwise.
Wow, that doesn't sound very customer centric.
No, I wasn't. No, that wasn't what I was going for. I was going for peace.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So,
Todd, hold on. When did you quit? When did you leave the high school job? I mean, what kind of high school teacher were you?
Yeah, so I was a high school industrial tech teacher. So I was teaching, you know, wood shop and metals and construction and things like that.
I think they called that home ec back in my day.
That's Jake's speed right there.
No, Jake home ec is like bacon pies.
Yeah.
Jeez, you know.
No, wait. What did they call it? What was it?
It was called shop, bro.
Technology ed.
Shop class, right?
You know, yeah. I don't know.
You're the shop teacher.
I was the shop teacher. Yeah. And I still have all 10, which is pretty sweet.
He's showing his hands right now.
Yeah.
A prosthetic finger.
Yeah, well, it's fake, but you know. No. So I taught from I taught for 5 years total. So I taught from 2005 to 2010. So I started real estate in 08, quit 2 years later. It wasn't that hard to replace my income. I was making $30,000 as a teacher after 5 years. So
killing it.
Yeah. Killing it. Yeah. I was on my way to making $32,000 if I would have stayed the next year. But then, I knew I wanted to continue to grow. My goal at the time was to get 1,000 units. I thought if I can get 1,000 doors, I'm going to be set. You know, that's my big audacious goal. And so I was like, how do I do this with buying these single families, duplexes? I just can't. I'm going to start buying 20 unit buildings, 30 unit buildings, that type of stuff. And then I started buying those. I'm like, these suck. Like, I don't want these anymore. So then I started buying larger 100+ unit buildings. And that's kind of where I've stayed now, is mostly buying these 100+ unit buildings.
Where did you
get some senior housing, got some commercial stuff as well. So
where did you get the number though? 1,000 doors? Cause Jake and I were really thrilled if we can get 100 doors when we started. 100 was like the pinnacle for us. And that was it for us. Where did you get 1,000 units?
I don't know. Yeah. Good question. Like, it's just some number that like popped in my head. I was like, ooh, that sounds like a great number. You know, I heard somebody speak. I heard a David Lindell, webinar or something like that. And I think he was talking about 1,000 units. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, that's a good number. And that would make sense. And you're going to make $75 to $100 per unit times 1,000 units. I was like, wow, that sounds really cool. I'm going to do that.
And anybody listening right now that wants to get into real estate, they saw how you did it. What kind of advice would you tell people to, hey, it's get into multifamily? I mean, the progression that we mostly see is people are getting into the single family space or smaller multifamilies and then saying, this is just really painful. How do I just not go there and do what Todd and Jake and Gina are doing?
Yeah. And you know, you got to start somewhere. So I would say first and foremost, I don't want to tell anybody you have to take a certain route. Here's the thing. A lot of people will like tell you, oh, you got to think big. You got to act big. And I think thinking big is good to an extent, but you have to take small steps and you have to take the steps you're willing to actually take. Right. So some people are like, oh, you got to go big right away. Got to go big. If you don't go big, you know, it's just wasting your time. And it's like, maybe it works for you. But maybe it's just going to stop you from starting because you're like, holy crap, how do I buy a 100-unit apartment? And you're paralyzed, right? You're not going to do it. And you're just sitting there and you're getting educated, and you never actually push the go button. So if it's buying a duplex that's going to get your first deal done, go buy a duplex. And then go buy that 10-unit and then go buy the 100-unit, you know, or
When education fills in the gaps really well is when you've done a couple small deals and then there's education required on the bigger deals to fill in a few of the gaps or blind spots. And when you've gotten the reps on a 2 or a 4 or a 10 unit, there's a belief system that starts to trigger in your brain that says, wow, I can see this and feel it and touch it. I'm doing it. I can add some zeros and some staff and do something bigger. And there's a progression that takes place where you 100%. Nailed it. Your belief systems change where 100-unit is not a pie in the sky that just scares the shit out of me. I've done smaller stuff and I can actually see it, taste it and smell it now because I'm that much closer. Yep. So putting in the reps and doing the work on the front end to get your mind right, I think is essential for many people. Maybe not for everybody to your point, but I think for the vast majority of people, putting in those reps, eating the shit early on the smaller stuff to get to the bigger place is very beneficial.
You're drinking shakes now, bro. You're not even eating shit anymore. So you've stepped up your game to shakes. Dude, That's pretty good.
Gino certified organic grass fed
organic shakes.
Yeah. I don't know. They don't even feed them corn. How do you not get a cow that's not eating corn? Whatever. Okay.
Yeah, you got to take action. So it's just as simple as that. And you got to figure out what action you're going to be able to take. And so you guys coach a lot of people. You know, there's guys and gals that come into your program and they're going to buy a 100-unit building or bigger, their first deal. And then there's other guys and gals that are going to come into the program and they're going to buy a 5-unit building. And either one is okay. because both of them took action. And it doesn't mean the person that bought the 100 unit for the first deal is going to be that much more successful than the person that bought a 5 unit. Quite frankly, that person bought a 5 unit might even become, you know, might even be build a bigger empire. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where you start. It matters that you start.
Think big, start small.
That's I wasn't ready for 100 out of the gates. I couldn't get my head wrapped around it. I didn't think it was for me. Yeah. I thought it was for other people. There was a lot of beliefs and internal things that I was dealing with to overcome to get there. I just
allow your paradigm to shift.
Yeah, I needed that transition to take place because I didn't think it was for me coming from a very small town, not seeing or just being exposed to that kind of thing. So it took a minute for me to get there.
Todd, what inflection points did you have going from that small multifamily to the first larger multifamily? What actions were you taking? What did you do differently to get into the bigger deal?
Yeah. What did I do differently? First and foremost, it was a lot of education. I was constantly bombarding myself and it never, and I still don't sit still like with what I know. I don't assume I know everything. I don't even know close to everything. So it's always about learning first and foremost. So I was constantly trying to meet people that were in the industry. I would look up who closed deals, who closed 100 unit, 50 unit, whatever apartment buildings, and then reach out to them and
I like that.
Try to have lunch with them or, you know, just happy hour or whatever with these guys and gals that were closing deals in my market. I would go to, you know, the local commercial meetups and stuff like that. And just so always trying to bombard yourself with the industry, right? If you want to be in a certain spot in multifamily, for me, I wanted to be in large multifamily. I got to be around those people. So I'm listening to podcasts. I'm listening to your guys' podcasts. I'm listening to, you know, Bigger Pockets. I'm listening to whatever, anything I can get my mind on. I'm just listening to all that stuff. I'm going to conferences and, you know, doing whatever I can to get around it. So that was probably a huge thing. I also hired a mentor. And for me, I didn't need necessarily, and not that I didn't need it, but I probably could have used it. The biggest thing I needed in a mentor wasn't to learn about real estate and multifamily. It was to like get my head, my brain out of my head, like this little trapped little, you know, boy that can't figure out how to like go to the next level. That's what I needed. So I hired a guy that was, you know, my sole purpose for hiring him was to like beat the crap out of my brain. Just make my brain a punching bag and just get me to change my mindset. And that's what we worked on. We worked on all my limiting beliefs and why I couldn't get there. And, you know, working with him, I will say it. I mean, it definitely was helpful to get to that bigger level.
As I asked you the question, I was thinking about Jake and I on our second deal. We did a 36 unit. To get into our third deal, it was 136 units and it was 6 months. And a couple of the actions that we took, I think could help the listeners out there, is we found a balance sheet partner. We found a partner that we have today who was very strong balance sheet wise, very strong liquidity wise. He didn't have the opportunity to invest in multifamily. He was investing in single families up north and they weren't cash flowing. So we were prepared. So remember when you said take action, if we hadn't done those first two smaller deals and had some type of track record, we may not have been able to tell him to come on our team and invest with us. I think that's something very, very important. The second component, I'll piggyback off of exactly what you said. I had a mentor, and as I'm doing my third deal, I always tell the story. Jake is asking me for these sheets, this takeover letter and this due diligence document and the credibility book. And I've got everything. And he thinks I'm this whiz.
SREO, right?
And PFS and DSCR and COCs. And I'm like, here we go. And that mentor truly helped us save a lot of time. Yeah. He helped us close the deal. And every time I had a question, I could go to my mentor and ask him, what should I do now? And that was just an amazing, like you said, I might not have needed it for the duplex or the 25 unit, although I probably should have had it for our first deal. I didn't have a mentor on our very first deal. I just left
the mentorship program.
It would have helped a lot. So I'm not out there telling everyone to go out and run and do a mentor. But if you're going to invest thousands of hours of your time and hundreds of thousands of dollars of your money. Learn how to do it properly. I mean, success leaves clues. So go out there and find somebody who's doing it. And it's important. And
just shorting the learning curve. The first deal we were we made so many stupid mistakes.
Man. Yeah. I mean, I will go tell everybody, go get a mentor. Yeah. Like, I quite frankly, like I said, I didn't necessarily need that multifamily mentor. If I would have hired a multifamily mentor, I probably would have avoided a lot of mistakes I made on my first and second, maybe even third and fourth deal. You know, because you just don't know.
It took us months before we started taking we started doing background checks.
Yeah,
we weren't doing background checks at first. It's like, dude, what? There was a list that the lady left because we had never done it before. The lady left a list of people who wronged her, right? And there was like 100 people behind the desk, and I was checking the list to see if there's any repeat offenders, and I actually found some that heard the place it sold, and they were trying to come back for more. And I was like,
oh my god,
imagine actually using a database and it was like right? Using actual some software. So we had to scale up pretty quick. We were making some errors and taking cash and just silly stuff.
But you know, Bill Hamm says, one of our coaches, he says you can either learn in the classroom or you can learn on the street.
The street learning, hurts more, man. It hurts so much more.
It costs a lot more, and there's just
the
things.
Pain
I mean,
is real. The pain is real, my friends.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're going to do this business, in any business, quite frankly, if you're going to do a business, you have to have people there that are on your team supporting you, helping you, mentoring you, guiding you. Like, you just have to have the right people in place. That's the only, there's no other way. And maybe you can get by with not paying a mentor. That's fine. If you find somebody that's willing to help you, that you don't have to pay, or you pay somebody, it doesn't matter, but you need mentors, people that have been there before that can help you along the way. I mean, why do people spend, you know, $100,000 on college, right? They spend $100,000 on college to be prepared for the next, you know, career step of their life. And then somebody thinks they're going to go do a $20 million multifamily deal. They're going to purchase this $20 million multifamily deal and bring on a bunch of investors without a school. Like, come on. Like, mm-hmm. What are you thinking?
Now we're in this current market. You've been doing deals over the last 10 years. What do you see right now in this part of the market cycle? And what's your buy rate criteria as far as going to certain markets? What are you looking for in a deal right now?
Yeah. So first part of that question, I think we're in a weird spot in the market. I think
when haven't we been in the last 3 years, honestly? Like, I mean, since COVID hit, it's been really, the world was supposed to end. Rents were supposed to stop. Forbearance. Yeah. Everyone, we have such short memories. But like in March of 2020, Jake and I have our scaling up coaches, and we're saying to him, don't go negative. Don't. First thing he says is Cardone's laying off half his staff. We got to really buckle down. I'm like, dude, this thing hasn't even started yet. And everyone proves predicting the end of the world until they print $5 trillion. So we have 100%. Been in this paradigm, in this weird market for at least 3 years. So didn't mean to
I would challenge you to say we've been in this weird market since I started in 2008. Yeah. I mean, it's just, there's never a time where it's normal. There's no normal times.
There's no predicting it either. Like, okay, so all those geniuses were predicting that rents were going to fall and vacancy was going to happen. In my opinion, the opposite happened, but you had a hard time staffing labor.
Yep.
So it wasn't rents. And now I think what you're going to start seeing is the actions by the Fed are going to actually force an increase in unemployment. Okay. And that in turn will make the labor market loosen up. So you'll be able to hire more people, but we're at the tail end on the rental side of things. So when people are losing jobs, rents will be impacted. And that's when you're going to see the rents actually starting to pull back. So I think all the experts are typically fucking wrong. And there's always going to be issues in any market. And it's swinging from my perspective, from a labor issue to more, now you're going to start to have to sell apartments again and rent them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, and this is probably, again, this is probably like, we can just repeat exactly what we just said about this statement, but I think it's a time right now to be really cautious when you buy. But again, was a year ago a time to
but
be
why,
really cautious
though?
When
what,
you buy?
What, yeah, what do you need to be cautious ago, about right now?
I think I we're looking at buying, by the way. Like, we're writing offers.
Pencils up, Gino.
Yeah, I we're not pencils down. I don't believe in that. I think if your pencils down, you're missing, well, you're just missing the market. Like, you don't know what's happening. Why would you? And maybe why, when people say pencils down, they're still underwriting. They're just not putting offers on. That's fine, whatever. But no, we're still looking and we're still writing offers and we're still active. I think.
But what's the issues right now? Because I think from my perspective, so, I'm seeing that if you get into a deal and the market rates have adjusted, but the rents have not caught up. So maybe they have 10 people. The rents went from 800 to 1,000. They have 10 people at 1,000, but there's a lag now and they're not getting the rest of the people up, but you're mm-hmm. buying based on getting everybody up to 1,000 versus actuals. There may actually be a dip coming. So I think the real risk, that's what I wanted to get. I knew you were going to say it, but I was trying to extract
Jake,
it out.
Jake, man, you got your shake, huh? You already drank that bad boy, huh? It's working.
Listen, he's read my mind. Yeah,
no, but that's exactly the point. That's where you're going to get burned right now. Is if you're over projecting and you don't know where the market's going to land, because we're in a softening, you know, the plane's coming down right now, kind of mode.
Look, I think when you look at like real estate, look at residential real estate. And you look at how residential real estate went and shot way up in like 2004, 5, 6, and then it went boom and it crashed way down. And now it went up gradually. But you look at that curve, and that curve was just the normal curve, right? But we just had some weird kind of up and down. And then now all of a sudden this big straight up, and now we're potentially going to see some down. Well, rents are the same thing. We typically see rents go up, you know, anywhere between 2 to 4%. But all of a sudden we had a year where rents went up. It depends on the market, but shoot, some markets went up 20, 30, maybe even more percent.
And people were underwriting new deals throughout for an eternity of 20% rent.
And they're doing that. And that's crazy. So what's going to happen? I don't think it's out of the question that we'll see rents go down, and I could see rents in certain markets going down by even double digits potentially. Mm-hmm.
Well, you printed a ton of money, so that money's out there. I think that you will see a pullback on rents, but I do think you have to factor in the money that was also printed that's out there. So I think you're going to see some stickiness, but maybe not all of it. So there's going to be some pullback, but what?
And every market's going to be so different, right? And
depending on, like, where there's migration and population and demand. But I think the key here is that you saw what is the story of this? You saw investors getting flush with cash. They were giving their money to syndicators. And if they were given the money, they had to place it. So you're seeing deals that were trading every year or every two years and up and up and up. So you're basically talking flips, right? So think back to 2008 when, you know, there might have been the same property flipped multiple times. Well, this was happening in the syndication space. So these deals are running up. Now, what we're talking about here is short-term investors that were in and out, in and out, in and out.
Yep.
And we're competing with them. And I'm speaking to Gino myself and maybe you as well, is we're long-term buy and hold investors. So there's a dislocation in how we're viewing it. The market is the market, but we're applying our filter to it and saying, what the hell is going on? And how am I supposed to make sense of this when I'm holding this stuff for the long term? Mm-hmm. Well, these guys don't give a shit about that. They don't care that there's decks on it that are going to fall off in the next 2 years and there's parking lot issues and roofs that are going to have to be addressed. So I'm looking,
they do now.
How the hell do I make this work? And I'm saying I can't. So we had to be very selective. And so what we did in order to lower our downside is we went to smaller deals that if we had to pay cash for them, we could 20, 30, 40 unit deals, but also that we thought made sense, but we weren't going to roll the dice, you know, and do a 250 unit at 160 a door when that might come back to 130 or 120. So that's essentially what happened to us. But I think that the best thing that Gino and I did in the last couple of years is we remained disciplined. We only took down about 100 units a year because to apply our filter of long-termism to the market, it wasn't working. So sometimes you have to be patient too. And I know, you know, people in the
team, it's
hard
to be patient.
Yeah, but people get frustrated too because they think it's never going to come back around. That shit came back quick. It just took a second for, you know, everyone to kind of start getting freaked out. Fear applies itself to the market. Everyone starts to pull back. And now we're getting owner finance deals put on a plate. So it's like, It's amazing to see that we'll call it the circle of life, but I think it's called a market cycle. But
did you just say you're getting owner finance deals coming?
Who? What? What?
Yes. Yeah.
I love that you said that because that's been a theory of mine. We're going to start to see that. And we've been writing multiple offers on deals and we'll say, hey,
it was proposed to us though. And this is the thing with owner financing. We don't even, in all the deals that we've done, it's just been like a back and forth negotiation. And it's an exit to get the deal done or an opportunity to open the door to get the deal closed.
So Todd, your theory is not a theory. It's the reality. It's the market cycle. So when you come from a seller's market right now that we're entering into a buyer's market, that's when we started buying our first deal in 2013. Banks are pulling back. They want 65% LTV, 50% LTV. Mom and pops, I mean, you're using bridge debt. So these deals aren't financeable, right? They're really hard to finance. When these mom and pops have owned them for years, there's a lot of equity. So all of a sudden, traditionally, you're not doing seller financing when somebody can put something on Crexie and sell it for $150 a door. But now you're seeing deals go on LoopNet and staying on there, and you're seeing motivated sellers. So the opportunity is real estate. You're always buying real estate. It's never a chance not to buy it. You can't always sell it though. And right now there's going to be opportunity for people who need to sell in this part of the cycle when all of a sudden you can't finance a deal and bring some owner financing. And so listen, we wrote the book with Bill Hamm, Creative Cash. It talks about seller financing. It talks about master lease options. And it's really, you need to understand when to use that tool in what part of the cycle. And you're saying spot on. I think the next 12 to 24 months, you're going to see an uptick in a lot of these people who have to sell deals, and seller financing is going to be ripe for those deals.
So we do syndications. So we're raising money for our deals. One of my favorite seller financing options that I like to do with my deals, because we can get, let's call it 65 or maybe 70% LTV with our bank, hit the debt service coverage ratio. But if I put a seller carry back on there, that messes things up, right? The banks don't like to see that. So instead of doing a seller carry back, what we have done is we create an A share for that seller. And that seller then will put in, let's call it $1 million of their proceeds, will go in as an A share investor, and we'll give them a preferred return with no equity upside. And so we'll give them, let's call it, maybe if we want to pay them 5% interest only. So we'll give them a 5% preferred return, no equity upside.
You heard it here, folks.
They don't show up on the debt, they show up on the equity.
Write that down, everybody. That's the tip. He's going to make you a millionaire in the next 12 to 18 months right there. Love that. That is awesome. That is great.
They get depreciation too. They have no idea what they're missing out on either. They're just like, 5%, great. I'll take
it. But like you said, Jake, they're getting cost seg on this deal. They're getting depreciation on this also.
Yep.
Gotta love
that. Not a bad deal, right? For some.
Not a bad deal. I mean, if that works, right? So it works. So we do a lot of multiple offers where we'll say, hey, seller, here's the full seller financing. Here's you throw some equity in the deal, and here's what we'll buy for cash. And that way we can have a little conversation.
Wow. Before we go to the personal growth questions, what's your buy rate criteria? What markets are you looking at right now? What, as far as returns, cap rates, what is that for Todd Dexheimer?
Yeah, so we are, we're mostly Kentucky, Tennessee. We are looking in Minnesota as well, just not a ton because Minnesota doesn't like landlords particularly. So we're cautious in Minnesota. We do look at kind of the Twin Cities suburbs because those are definitely a little more friendly.
What do you have just to the east of Minnesota? Isn't there like a reasonable state just to the east of you?
Just to the west of us, there's South Dakota and North Dakota. Those are awesome. And just to the south of us is Iowa. I would say Wisconsin to the east.
Isn't there a city in Wisconsin just that's like not too far from you that would be okay or no?
Madison, Wisconsin, not great.
Not so much.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin, definitely.
Milwaukee.
Yeah, not great.
That's how I said in Wayne's World.
Yeah. Heavily influenced by Chicago. Mm. So that's kind of where we're at. When we're looking at markets, honestly, that hit kind of the main fundamentals, landlord friendly, business friendly,
population growth.
We also don't want a city or state, city in particular, that has had just massive population growth, massive rent growth, I should say, is even more something we're not interested in. We don't want something that's had this crazy massive rent growth. Now that's really weird now because everything has had massive rent growth. So that's a little relative, but we like slow, steady growth markets that we feel are going to continue slow, steady growth. It's not going to be like the Phoenix, the, you know, a lot of the Texas markets that go up and then they go way down. Mm-hmm. We don't like those markets.
Very cool.
We like boring. Right,
yeah, no, keep it simple. I'm with you, man. Let's take a quick time out here from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know this isn't a high-pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now.
All right. We're gonna continue on that of, you know, that whole track of keeping it boring. We like to keep it boring over here as well. What about scaling up? Someone's getting into the business. They may have 50 units right now. Give them some tips for scaling and getting out of their own way, because I think a lot of people struggle with that. And that's something that's prevented us in the past. And I know it's done the same thing for many folks out there. So any tips on getting to the next level?
Yeah. Man, I love that topic, scaling up. And, you know, first of all, I think it starts with, you have to have that vision, right? You have to understand kind of where you want to go. And the vision always grows and changes and can continue to shift as your paradigm shifts. But so you have to kind of have that burning desire, that obsession, that, right? Just understand why you're doing this, where you're going. Education, obviously, just, you got to always be willing to learn and grow. I think being willing to not go at it alone. I think it's so easy as an entrepreneur I've struggled with this. I don't
multifamily
know
is a team sport, right?
Yeah, I struggle with it because I think a lot of entrepreneurs are like do-it-yourselfers, and we think we're better at it than a lot of other people. We'll just do it ourselves type of thing. You got to be willing to build teams and surround yourself with people that are smarter than yourself, or at least as smart as you, and can take over some stuff. And so you can focus on specific things, and the team can grow and build. And that's the only way to do really any kind of business, multifamily included. So, you know, and then along with that is, as you're building your teams, you got to build your systems, and you got to really understand how to grow that part of the business as well. Cause you can't just assume everybody knows your plan. So you got to build the system so they can have a plan to follow.
Well, any book recommendations, anything you've read in the last few years that made a positive impact on your life?
Oh man, there's so many. E-Myth is a great book when we're talking scaling up, especially when we're talking about building a business. I mean, that's just.
Gino almost got in a fight with Gerber back in the day.
Really? You guys like fist, like.
Yeah, I had to break.
Well, you know what the problem was? The problem was that we're talking about the business and I'm like, we're doing this education platform and we have multifamily at the same time. So he's like, dude, drop the education, go into multifamily full time. If we had done that, I wouldn't be speaking to Todd Dexheimer right now. I wouldn't be able to speak to Ryan Serhant a couple of weeks ago. I wouldn't be able to speak to Pace Morby and see what he's doing.
We're in both full time, bro. Come on.
Yeah. And he's like, focus. And I get what he's saying. And I totally understand it. If I was on an island by myself, then I would probably heed that advice. It's great advice. But at the same time, we're able to shift responsibilities and the businesses sort of are I don't want to say entwined, but when our students come out to our properties in Knoxville, they're learning from us. And when we're going out to students' properties, we're learning from them. And it's just a great relationship to have between the businesses because we're learning and we're utilizing resources as far as, you know, payroll services, human resources, human capital, right? So for us, it was a good dialogue.
There's a lot of synergies there too. Yes. So it's just,
I understand. I understand what he's saying, and I agree with him to a point.
There's two of us. There's two of us.
Well, you know, but you guys are creating kind of an ecosystem. It's not that you creating a coaching program and the multifamily and they don't work together, right? Mm-hmm. That's different. Those are two businesses that are working against each other and causing abrasion.
All of our businesses are working together. We call it the power wheel,
so
baby.
You guys have this whole like hamster wheel that everything is going around at the same speed, same time. We're all running together, right? All the legs are moving at the same time. It's not that one body's going this way, one body's going that way. That's different. That's a bad business.
Yeah, it's not. We're not doing oil and gas and multifamily or something. Which is fine.
Exactly.
But. Hey, Todd, when Gino said he was out on an island, did you start thinking like Castaway? And did you see him with like a beard and kind of like a loincloth? I saw Wilson the volleyball next to him. It was
really. Dude, I wouldn't last out there 2 weeks, bro. Mosquitoes would kill me.
You guys show this. The video doesn't get shown, does it?
Oh yeah, it does.
Oh, so people will see that he actually took his shirt off when he said that.
Yeah.
Hey, I used to do podcasts like that. Okay, I used to show up with podcasts, and Jake's like, "We're doing video today." I'm like, "Bro, you want to tell me? I'm on the beach here. Gotta throw my shirt back on." So,
those were the days.
They were, Jake.
One more thing about scaling too is I think you have to be willing to just, you have to understand in this business or in any business, you're going to get smacked around, right? You're going to get punched. And it's the old great Mike Tyson, right? Everybody has a plan until he gets punched in the mouth. You're going to get punched in the mouth. You're going to have to get back up. You're going to have to continue to take action. You're going to have to continue to push on. And knowing your goals and knowing where you're heading is going to allow you to do that. And having those systems and processes and teams and all that kind of stuff in place is going to allow you to get punched in the face and get knocked down and get back up.
I just threw my tooth out.
Jake, you don't build a portfolio. You build people that help you build a portfolio. That's what Todd is ultimately saying. You can't do it by yourself. 100%. You need to. And when you first start out, you're the entrepreneur that's the I'm a mentality. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But I'm going to get burned out at about 75 units. And that's when that next inflection point starts of, hey, I need to start hiring people. So it's important that you have that realization going in. And Jake and Gino, we say we create multifamily entrepreneurs. That's what we do. We help you to get into the business. But then ultimately, it's not buy right, finance right. It's buy right, manage right. And finance, right? Pulling all three of those together is truly important.
I like that you said we create multifamily entrepreneurs and not multifamily investors. There's a big difference.
Huge difference. I agree. Difference.
Yeah.
So Todd, what was your Mike Tyson moment? When did you get smacked in the face? What was the biggest mistake that you made in the business that just sticks with you to this day? What was the one though? Everyone's got one. What's the one that you still like wake up and going, oh shit, that sucked.
Yeah. There's a few that I could pull out here, but I think one of the bigger ones was just not hiring attorneys when I should. And the probably the final like nail in the coffin was I purchased this single family house that I was going to fix and flip. And this couple came in, they wanted to buy it before we fixed and flipped it. And so we did the work for them. So we sold the house with the contract to do the renovation. And we didn't have very strong contracts at all. All this stuff happened. You know, we had a bunch of change orders, but they were, you know, an email exchange change order, nothing in real writing other than a couple emails or some text messages or stuff like that. Anyways, ended up losing about $70,000 through this whole kind of debacle, spent a ton of time on the phone with attorneys and it was just a freaking mess. And it was just because I was, you know, trusting people with a handshake and not really taking the time to put in real contracts. And I didn't want to spend money on attorneys. Who wants to do that? You know, yuck. So now you know, everything we do, we run through our attorneys and we have contracts. I mean, we deal with investors. Everything we do with investors is a contract. Not that I don't trust the investors. Not that I hope they don't trust me. We trust each other. That's why we're doing business. But we also trust each other and have legal contracts because we want to make sure there's no room for, you know, questions.
It's all fine till it's not.
Disagreements.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's easy to go, oh, I don't remember what you said about this. Well, here's the contract. Here it is. Yep.
Keeping it simple. What's the best way for folks to get a hold of you?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So our website's EnduriusCapital.com, EnduriusCapital.com. It's Todd@EnduriusCapital.com as well. And I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn, but send me a private message if you're going to connect with me, because I'm super bad at connecting with people, especially on Facebook. So send me a friend request, send me a PM, say, hey, I saw or I heard you on Jake and Gino's podcast, and connect with me.
All right, Gino, take us home, big dog.
Stenzi, this is going to be a fun one, Stenzi, because you got young Todd Dexheimer working in shop. Right. He's working and he's making some, I don't know what the shop that is, but back then I remember working with wood, and I remember sitting there.
You know, he's always working with the wood, right?
Oh boy. Well, I like working with wood, Jake. Anyway, 2008, he decides at $30,000 a year, I ain't getting rich and I ain't going to retire for another 40 years. So what's the side hustle? Back then we called it a second job. Now it's called a side hustle. So his side hustle back then was buying a couple single family homes. And he figured, you know what? I buy five or six of these. I'm already making my money as a teacher. So let me quit the teaching job. In 2010, he quits. And he starts his portfolio. And I would not say, I have to mention this because we haven't mentioned this in the podcast. He was not the Chick-fil-A of apartments back then, because he's like, don't call me unless you're dead, unless you're flooded out, unless there's Noah's Ark, or unless there's a fire. Leave me the hell alone.
He had Google's customer service. You couldn't get a hold of him, right?
So that was his mantra back then. But he's like, you know what? I want to get bigger. I don't want to have 100 units. I heard some webinar say that 1,000 units is great, so I want 1,000 units. And he thinks big. He started small. And as he scaled up and got into the business, he learned the tool of syndication, learned how to raise capital, and he's weathered the storm. And like he said, it's been a weird market, but things to us are starting to normalize. And when you hear seller financing, all of a sudden, I think the winds are starting to change. I think there's opportunity. I think he's going to see a little blood in the streets now, not in his properties, but I think in the streets. And I think there's going to be opportunity for all of us listening on this show to start buying assets again.
Well, he said if there was blood, they could call him, right? So maybe, maybe that's how you get Todd on the phone. Todd, thanks so much for today. And gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's a G-Daddy. We make it happen. We'll see you next time.